Maverick News presents The Rick Walker Show. Defrag your mind.
Well, welcome back to Costa Rica. I'm Rick Walker. Welcome back, Maverick family and new viewers. Great to have everybody here. As promised, I am back in the saddle tonight, and I'm going to share a bunch of things with you. Yes, I did go into a town here in Costa Rica to get a taste of what the local culture is like and to search for freedom, to find out if indeed Costa Rica is more free than Canada, as I have been told by some people who are encouraging Canadians to move here. I'll tell you what I found out today. Also, O.J. Simpson has passed away at the age of 76. And generals in the United Kingdom, in Canada, warning that Ukraine is about to turn into a meat grinder. In fact, it sort of already is turning into a meat grinder, and that's because military aid is being held up in the United States. We'll have a little bit more on that for you here as well in this edition of Maverick News. We have that. I'll also bring you up to date on the condition of that Missouri teen who had her head smashed on the sidewalk. Bring you up to date. And Axe the tax. Freedom protests. Where does it all stand heading into this weekend? Is it a real thing? Is momentum building? Do these people really love Canada as I love Canada, as maybe you love Canada? We'll get into that too when we come back on the other side of this. Don't go away.
Greetings, brave mavericks. Our quest for truth continues. We go beyond fake news. Together we expose propaganda. Together we pull others out of rabbit holes. We are maverick thinkers. We are all unique individuals, defenders of individual rights and freedoms. Credible, trusted, grounded in reality. Maverick News. Maverick News. Defending free speech. Donate at freedomreporters.com. Do it now. Tomorrow may be too late.
Too late.
Maverick News. The world is watching.
Okay, so let's get right into it. Let's start first with the situation in Ukraine, which brings us to Canada and the conference that has been ongoing over the last couple of days, the Canada Strong and Free Networking Conference. You've seen some world leaders there, including Boris Johnson, who has just come out to say that Donald Trump needs to understand, according to Boris Johnson, former PM of, Britain, that you can't make America great again unless you have a free and sovereign Ukraine. That's his message to Donald Trump. All this coming as Canadian and UK generals are issuing a warning saying that Ukraine is about to turn into a meat grinder because Ukraine is running out of ammunition and they need support from the United States. Here's Boris Johnson at that conference.
Well, you want me to get... Well, John, it's an honor to be here with you and with Tony, and it's fantastic to be here in Canada with this incredible sense that the Conservative Party is not only resurgent, but poised for victory. That's And that, I mean, I'm just saying by what the polls are saying, right? I'm not saying anything controversial here. It would far be it from me to come and intrude into domestic politics of a friendly country. But I observe that, and wouldn't it be wonderful if this dynamism of this Canadian Conservative might communicate itself to the UK? I in a sense, maybe it will. We still have time, in spite of the gloomy things that you've just said about conservatism in the UK and Brexit and so forth. Maybe things will be all right. I just want to say, on your point about Ukraine, John, very, very quickly, I think Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, is in favour of passing the supplemental. I think Mike, as far as I understand the matter, is pro-Ukraine, right? And I think most of the Republican Party certainly is. They have a wing that isn't. What I would say to the skeptics about Ukraine is, if you're worried about the rise of autocracies around the world, as Tony and I certainly are, and I know you are, if you're worried about the long-term ability of America to remain the superpower, if you're worried about democracy around the world, if you're worried about security, then investing in the security of Ukraine is the most cost-efficient thing you can possibly do. I would say to Mike, my cousin Mike Johnson, long lost, separated from. I would say, Mike, there aren't any American boots on the ground in Ukraine, and yet those Ukrainians are fighting for freedom and security everywhere, for the whole Euro-Atlantic area. You're investing. America is currently investing in supporting the Ukrainians about 5% or less of their annual defense spending. It is a fantastically efficient way of supporting freedom. And by the way, most of the money, I would also say to Mike and to all Republican friends and colleagues, most of that money is, of course, going to American jobs, American companies that are involved in the defense industry. I would say, if you want to send a signal to China, then it would be a huge mistake to think about making a move across the states of Taiwan. Then make sure that Ukraine wins. But fundamentally, what I would say is, if you are the party of Ronald Reagan, if you want to make America great again, then don't begin a new Republican presidency, which may well happen. You don't begin that by conceding victory to Vladimir Putin and letting the Ukrainians lose. And
so we'll see where that goes. I can only say it is obviously Trump and MAGA that is putting up the opposition to spending additional money on the war in Ukraine. Definitely. Politics being played there. And I have to say, I always get squeamish when I hear any arguments about military actions that are based on the economics, the fiscal picture as it relates to the military industrial complex. But that being what it is, there are other considerations as well, and you can assess as you see fit. Still at that same conference, Pierre Poilievre talking about axing the tax, the carbon tax. Here he is, leader of the Conservative Party. That's what Boris Johnson was referring to. Conservatives poised for victory in Canada. A conservative resurgence of sorts. Let's hear what Pierre has to say at this same conference today. This was just hours ago.
Then Pat put forward another law, which could put you under house arrest or peace bond under suspicion of something unacceptable you might say in the future.
Yeah, talking about,
you know, this guy, if he read
freedom,
if he had read 1984, he would have thought it was an instruction manual and not a warning. Fortunately, there is an outbreak of common sense across the country. I think it was just yesterday or the day before, General Hillier said that the thing he hears the most often when he walks around the streets of this country is, this is not Canada. We don't recognize this place. And that's what I hear from everything from fifth generation Canadians to immigrants who arrived here 10 years ago. They say, my God, what happened to this country in the last 8 years? Can you imagine if you had been in a coma in 2015 and woke up to this nightmare, how unfamiliar it would all seem? But the good news, my friends, is that life was not like this before Justin Trudeau, and it won't be like this after he's gone. Our common sense plan may seem simple because it is. All the greatest things in life are simple. Complexity is the last refuge of scoundrel. So let's get down to the simple plan that will work, the simple principles that have always worked. We will axe the tax to bring down the cost of heat, gas, and groceries. And we will cut income taxes so that hard work actually pays off again and people can bring home the benefits of their hard work. And we will say here and everywhere that we will axe the tax. Who in this room is ready to axe the tax? Axe the tax, 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 axe the tax.
And that's Pierre's slogan, and it has been adopted by a certain element of the freedom movement. They're out protesting, still protesting, day 11, I believe this is now, where they're sitting on the side of the highway out in Alberta along the Trans-Canada Highway and in certain other strategic locations at border crossings, interprovincial border crossings, not ever really explaining why. I guess you can assess that as well on your own. But when they're talking about axing the tax, it seems that's really just a surface level thing. They have so much more that fuels their passion. You know, I talked yesterday about how much I love my country. It seems some people view things much differently. Even though they're standing by the side of the highway waving Canadian flags, seems maybe they're not really behind the flag in the way that I'm behind the flag. Maybe not the way that you are behind the flag. You know, I know that when Donald Trump was running in the last election and maybe the one before, he was talking about making it illegal to burn the American flag because it's so unpatriotic. And yet we see people waving the flag here saying that it was useful to, and I quote, lure people in for protests. And then they turn around and say things like this. We have people out there involved in these protests, which they are trying to ramp up for this weekend, apparently. Let me find this clip for you here. This is, yes, Gordon Berry, who was one of the key figures in the Save the Children freedom rallies that seemed to fizzle out because, as he said, it was violent and some people didn't like that. As you know. And so this is how Gordon views and some other people in his circle view the Canadian flag and Canada in general. So I thought I should share this with you because You may or may not share his views on the flag and Canada and what it means to be patriotic.
That's the truth of the matter, man. And I know these people look at us right now with this initiative, and I know they're laughing a bit and whatever, but I also do know there's a bit of nervousness there because there is people. So I'm not trying to attack this initiative. What I'm trying to do is light a little bit of fire under the ass of the people involved in this initiative and the ones that were supposed to be involved, the ones that are supporting it online, to get out and support. But don't just get out there and sit in the parking lot and wave a goddamn flag, especially the corporate flag of this frigging country that's enslaving you and your kids and your grandkids, period. Burn that motherfucker, man. Burn it.
Oh, okay. Just thought you might want to hear that. But they want you to come out this weekend and support them for a great weekend of family fun and patriotism. Great place to bring your kids to a location along the Trans-Canada Highway. Bring your pets too, they say. You can bring your pets and your kids. And they're not shutting anything down, so I guess the traffic's going to be flying by at 100, 110 kilometers an hour all day long. So, you can assess that the way you want to. People really need to think. I don't know, you want to take your kids out for a weekend or longer? Just hang out on the side of the Trans-Canada Highway with your kids. Anyway, we'll see how that goes. I have been taking a look at what's been going on out there, and it looks like they have right now maybe, I don't know, anywhere from a dozen to maybe 20 vehicles. So the reason, I guess, they haven't been able to do everything they really want to do is because they just can't seem to get the numbers. Just can't seem to generate this. Just can't get people to come out and hang out on the side of the Trans-Canada Highway. You know, because what better place would there be for a family-oriented protest than on the side of the number one highway connecting all of Canada? Safety first. I'll be right back.
Fighting the Great Reset. By leading the great resistance. Maverick News. The antivirus programs for your mind.
Maverick News. The world is watching.
Okay, we're back. The internet here is a little sluggish, so I apologize for any lags or glitches that we're having. We're not in the studio. We're remote here in Costa Rica, where today I went off in search of freedom. And why did I do that? Well, because I'm here, so that I'd make the most of the trip by exploring a little bit and checking out these claims that Costa Rica is a cheaper place to live, a freer place to live, and a place where some online real estate, in fact, some of them are actually online selling real estate, I've noticed. I won't get into the specifics or names at this point, but it piqued my interest. And since I was coming here anyway, I thought I would check it out. So today I did go into a town away from this hotel. You know, here it's very pristine. It's a touristy type of place, right? Of course. So I went into town, and I'm just going to be straight up and honest with you. Here's what I experienced today. Got over to this town about a half an hour from here, a small town. It's also tourist oriented. So I still don't have a full perspective on what this country is like. But I was told that you could rent condos here or places to live for about one third the price of what they cost back in Canada. What I found out is that in this town over here, it would cost you to for a condo suitable for, say, three people to live in, it would cost you about $2,000 US a month. Now that sounds very comparable to what you would be paying in Canada, especially with that town being where it's located. I don't know exactly how the pricing works out, but that's kind of where things are at there. What was the town like? It certainly does not meet the same standard that I'm accustomed to in Canada, or even in the vast majority of places that I've visited in the United States. The sidewalks, and I have video of this, but I can't share it with you tonight because I just don't have production equipment here to edit this stuff together and just limited resources that way. But I mean, the sidewalks, all like they're gravel there, where there is a cement, it's all uneven and broken, not well maintained. It would be unacceptable where, you know, in Canada, because people would be twisting their ankles and suing every 10 minutes. People would be complaining for sure. The infrastructure would be fixed. So I don't know what the tax rate is in Costa Rica. I keep saying Costa because I'm Canadian, Costa Rica. But I do know that the average annual income here is about $16,000. And that's below the average for most developed countries. In addition to that, only about 55% of the people who live here are gainfully employed. So the economy is suffering, but I have noticed that in this area, because of tourism, it is growing. I see cranes building here. There's construction happening just outside of this hotel, more development, and that's largely because of tourism. So that's being, you know, the driving force behind the economy. But what about freedom? I noticed people riding around on motorcycles without helmets on. So clearly the laws here, as they are in Mexico, I've noticed, are not as restrictive when it comes to things like that. Beyond that, I'm still not entirely sure. However, I did speak to a number of people about what it was like during the pandemic here. And I can tell you that the stories I'm getting are that everything was locked down, all the restaurants here, everything was shut down, just like it was in Canada and many parts in the United States. Masks mandatory. And, of course, government mandates for vaccinations as well. Not unlike what we experienced at home at all. So in my estimation, no more freedom here that I'm seeing so far. The quality of services you're receiving from government for the taxes that are being paid, not as high, because the streets are not as clean. The sidewalks are all broken, and at least in the areas that I've seen. Now, I want to go into a bigger city and see what it's like there. But here, even from what I've seen, not up to standard. Would I want to live there? No. Is it a nice place to visit? Yeah, it's a great little touristy thing, but I wouldn't want to live there. In addition to that, as soon as we arrive, we run into, I was there with my son, and we run into a gentleman who is selling things that he makes from leaves to tourists. And we have a conversation with him. Now, do you think he's making a living by selling these heart-shaped things that he makes out of leaves that he takes from the vegetation around the area there? And I don't think so, because what did he really try to sell us? Cocaine. I'm just being honest. That's what happened. Now, is that unusual in even like a big city? I mean, you can get it in any U.S. I can get it in my community. People don't approach me in my hometown to buy the stuff. They probably know that I'm not interested. Maybe. I don't know. But that's what I experienced. In addition to that, you go into a shop, and what are they selling? Butterfly knives. Okay. All right. So there's freedom that way. But in where I live, that's a prohibited weapon. Do I feel safe walking around the streets there? Generally, yeah, I felt pretty safe. But if I was living there, my guess is because of the economy, probably, you know, I don't know what the crime rate is. I'm going to have to research that more. So I really just don't quite understand. I'm still trying to assess safety, value for your tax dollars, you know. And then I was listening to Freedom George talk about this demonstration that they're trying to ramp up even for the weekend. And he was going on, you know, several times saying that he can't stay there forever. He needs to go back to work. It's costing him $450 a day. So then I did the math. You know, if you're working for $450 a day, there's a guy who has the potential, if he actually went to work, would be making $120,000 a year. At that rate of income, your tax rate is 50%, your income tax rate. Now, that's if you just make the money and pay the tax. There are all kinds of ways to mitigate that tax rate. You can take a portion of your income and put it into RRSPs in Canada, Registered Retirement Savings Plans. You do that, your tax rate comes way down. That money then goes into tax-free retirement savings, and you can max that out to whatever the allocated amount is, and you can reduce your actual taxable income and save for the future, for retirement. $115,000, $120,000, a little OT here and there, even just working straight up. But, you know, out there protesting the carbon tax, which just added 3 cents a liter to the price of fuel, which I get, you know, but apparently you can't survive on that in Canada at $120,000 a year. Here they're living on 16 grand back home. A truck driver or combine driver can make like 120 G's and use the tax rules legitimately to save for retirement, put a portion of that away and reduce your taxable income. And there are other things you can do as well to mitigate that tax. If you have half a brain and consult an accountant, you don't even have to have half a brain, just go and talk to an actual accountant. Now, I'm just being straight up honest with you. That's the reality of the situation. But, you know, I'm not in favor of the carbon tax. I think it's a terrible thing. And it's a tax that is designed to modify behavior. And it's adding to the cost of living across the board for a lot of people. And it's ridiculous. It is, because there are so many people in Canada who are suffering, all right, who don't make $120,000 a year. And so that much I absolutely get. And the inflation is out of control. And Justin Trudeau has printed too much money. It has resulted in far too much inflation. It is destroying the economy slowly but surely, or at least, you know, they're having to employ modern monetary theory in order to stretch out the economy and reset the currency, which ends up being a tax on people through inflation, that a debased currency rate of about 15 to 20% a year, which is absolutely a major factor. But this inflation is happening everywhere, including here. It cost me $3 for a can of ginger ale today, U.S. and Costa Rica. Go into the bigger city, maybe it might be a little bit cheaper, but it's kind of the going rate. And in fact, back in Canada, if you go into a convenience store, you're probably going to pay somewhere around the same price these days. So now that's $3 US. Back in Canada, that would actually cost me probably less, because I'd get it for about $2.50, maybe $3 at a convenience store Canadian, which is automatically about, you know, 20% less. That's just what I'm finding here. I'm not sugarcoating anything. I'm not selling anybody anything. I'm not selling real estate in Costa Rica. I'm just here checking it out. But I see some people who are ready, willing, and eager to take people's retirement money and convince them to move on down here. So I'm going to try to find out the truth for you. And if it is indeed a cheaper place to come, I'll tell you. And if not, I'm going to tell you what I'm telling you today. That's what I experienced. Would I want to live here? No. Would I come down here and spend a week, 2 weeks, a month, maybe even 3 or 4 months during the winter? Yeah, I would probably look at doing that if I could afford it. But I don't think I'd want to live here based on my quality of life back home. These things are all relative, and you can take things to the extreme, right, in the way you assess things. Oh, but, you know, the mandates and the thing, and it's the same here. It's the same here. I turned around in the cafe where we stopped to have that beverage, where we paid $3 each for a can of soda. I looked at the TV screen, which was playing the news, the local news. And you know what I saw immediately? A picture of a kid getting the jab, because they're promoting it here, too. It's the same. It's the same. No better. Probably not a lot worse. The economy back home, as bad as it's getting, it's still not as bad as this. It's still better. Here at the hotel, it's a whole different world. And thank God that it is, because it's injecting money into the economy here and providing employment and lifting everything up. That's the other thing I noticed when I got off the plane immediately here in Costa Rica. The first thing I noticed was brands, American brands. And not like the typical corporate brands like Coca-Cola or, you know, General Motors, if you want to call that an American brand these days, or, you know, even Coca-Cola, it's a world brand, right? But I did notice things like Christie's, Waldorf Astoria, because these are places also that are promoting real estate sales, trying to get people, retirees, to spend all their money here and move here to Costa Rica for a retirement lifestyle. They want your money. Is it really cheaper? Is it better? The weather here has been really good, but it's really, really hot right now in April. So if you don't like the heat, probably not the best place, but I like the heat, so it'd be okay. But that's the way it is here. But you're not going to have snow. Like, I didn't see any hockey arenas here. Okay, so it's bad ice, not good for hockey. And I don't think hockey's, you know, up here on the list of priorities for people. That's my experience today, traveling around and checking out Costa Rica. Beautiful place, very friendly people. But, you know, you're getting the picture, right? It's just different. It's different. And I have to say, where I live, the streets are way cleaner than they were where I went today. Are bigger cities better here? Maybe they are. This was a small town. Maybe the municipality there, the municipal government, doesn't have the resources to keep those sidewalks maintained. The buildings also looked, you know, run down. All the shops were basically locally owned. It wasn't like you know, corporate stuff. There was no major shopping mall there, for instance. There were plazas, but it was all, you know, mom and pop shops, pretty much. You know, some corporate branding here and there. Different kind of country, to be sure. But I'll check more out. And, you know, I do like it here. And it was a very interesting place. We'll find out more. What's going on in other news? Well, O.J. Simpson passed away. Cancer, 76 years old. I just make a note of it. Back in the 90s, of course, his murder trial it was like a precursor to reality television. It really was. The trial. I remember it vividly. The Bronco chase, the drama surrounding the whole thing. And I was sad, you know, because you had this American, all-American football hero for so many people who had fallen from grace. And it exposed the racial divide in America in a way that it really hadn't been exposed before, because you had this guy who had sort of bridged over into acceptance in the white communities, if you will, right? His Hertz television commercial where he was jumping over, you know, carts of luggage to get to the Hertz desk. And that commercial made him a household name, even more so than his achievements as a football star. I remember the Buck Rogers television series where Gil Gerard makes reference to O.J. Simpson. And he says, you know, who's the juice? He's talking to Tweaky, the robot. As a kid, I remember that stuff. And he's like, O.J. Simpson. And then the murder trial, and he's acquitted, but then later, 13 years later, found guilty on the robbery charges stemming from him trying to recover what he said was stolen sports memorabilia that he believed had rightfully belonged to him. But he went to jail over that and had to pay reparations in a civil suit to the victims of the murder. His former wife, and Ron Goldman. So just make note of that. And then a lot of people commenting today who are involved in that whole story, including Alan Dershowitz, who is part of his legal dream team, saying that he's sad to see him pass away. Other people not so sad, because they're convinced that even though the glove didn't fit, they shouldn't have acquitted him. So a lot of people didn't have much use for OJ after all of that. But a very American story. And that Bronco chase still embedded in the psyche of Americans even today, all these years later. OJ Simpson, dead at the age of 76. I'll be right back. Don't go away.
News. The world is watching.
Okay, Kaylee Gain, that teenager who is from St. Louis, got into that fight with a high school rival, or a teen rival, I guess, anyway. She is out of intensive care. I just wanted to bring people up to date on that, because this is a story that we did cover when it happened about a month ago. And of course, a lot of concern about whether she would even survive because she got into this street fight. It was like a kind of a melee with a bunch of teens. And some people say that it was maybe, you know, wondering if it was racially motivated in some way because it was between a white girl and a black girl. The black girl, her name escapes me here at the moment. I will get it for you here. I've got some notes. They're trying to still put her on trial as an adult. It's Mamise Declue. She's been identified. Even though she's only 15 years old, the name has been released. And there was a longstanding feud between Kaylee Gain and Mamise Declue. And it erupted into violence last month when the pair both agreed to settle their differences. This happened about a mile away from Hazelwood East High School near St. Louis. And Kaylee Gain got the worst of it, of course, and ended up on the ground. And her head was smashed into the pavement multiple times. Not the pavement, but the sidewalk. And she was in intensive care. Now she's out, but she is still having a lot of difficulty speaking. And it isn't clear if she will fully cover or not. There was a fundraising that has been taking place to support her. And I believe that is ongoing as well. So just wanted to bring everybody up to date on where things stand with that. Her father also coming out. Her father, grandfather. I believe it was her grandfather coming out. And talking about, no, it's her father. It was her father came out, has come out and is talking about the guilt that he's feeling because he didn't provide enough support in his view, I guess, given that she had a troubled childhood coming from a dysfunctional family where there was a lot of drug abuse is what her father was saying. And so it's just a tragic story all the way around. And Kaylee also, apparently, according to her father, had some drug issues that she had overcome. And she was, you know, kind of getting back on track, according to him. But just any way you slice it, a tragic, tragic story still unfolding. We'll keep you posted as time goes on. And we've learned more about, you know, the long-term prognosis for Kaylee and the other girl who is going to end up in court. Some charges being laid against some of the other kids, apparently, as well. Now, there is also this story that people are making reference to, and they're sending me information on it. It's this Bill 419 out in Nova Scotia. And a lot of concerns surrounding it because it's the Financial Measures Act. But what it does in reality, not in its entirety, it does a lot of different things. It does some, I would say, some good things in on the financial front where it, for instance, it will allow retirees who become incapacitated or have a shortened life expectancy to unlock the majority of their retirement savings to get them early rather than leave them locked up where they will never see the benefit from them over time because they're about to pass away. So there are provisions like that in this new legislation from the Nova Scotian government. But the thing that is of most concern to people is there's one section in there near the very bottom, and it is giving the Nova Scotian government, the province of Nova Scotia in Canada, authority, and it has just passed, it has received royal assent, so it is now law. It's giving them the authority to access, compel doctors to send personal medical information to the government. Now, the legislation, the law, is written so that it is supposed to be used only for broad general planning by the provincial government for healthcare purposes, not so that specific information on patients can be obtained and used as in that way, targeting or using information on an individual basis. It's supposed to be used in the aggregate, as they say. And also, it will be pumped into this digital app where the government is saying that people who download the app, it will give them, the patient, instant access to their own medical records. And then, of course, that could make the entire system more efficient because you can then go to the doctor or a hospital and have your information available for the doctor there instantly through your health app. Now, of course, a lot of people concerned about it, especially after coming through that pandemic. Concerned, what's the government really going to do with this personal information? And I'm here to say that, you know, I think that on the one hand, it's kind of a bit of a red herring, because I'm here to tell you that the government already has this information, whether you like it or not. And that's because you have socialized healthcare. And that means that the government of Nova Scotia, healthcare is administered provincially. They have access to all the billing records. The doctors have to send the billing information in. So they have access to this information anyway. They know every time you go to the doctor, they know what you've been there for. And if they really want to access that information, they can get it. You go to the doctor and you say, hey, doc, I've got a sore elbow. The doctor has to put in a claim for that, so he gets paid. It's the only way that he's going to get paid. And he has to tell them who the patient is, so he has to give them your provincial health number. The reality is the government already has the information. This is just another layer to that. And what it really is doing, though, is it's speeding up the process through which the doctor has to submit that information to the government. And then, of course, the concern is that it's broadening the scope of the use of that data. And will it be used properly, appropriately? And I'll tell you, I did read the entire bill last night before coming on here. I made a point of it. I read the whole thing. And the language is too loose. There's no question about that. And I would say that over time, unless the government tightens up that language and modifies that legislation, it will lead to some litigation. There potentially could be some constitutional challenges even, as that information may and down the road be used in an inappropriate way by politicians and bureaucrats who engage in overreach. And, you know, if you give these politicians and bureaucrats an inch, they'll take a mile. They generally do. So I absolutely understand the concerns. I don't think that those concerns are properly focused, honestly. It's because it's being conveyed to the public by the people sounding the alarm bells in a very broad and extreme sense, instead of in a very focused way, focused on the language that really, I think, needs to change in order to affect real change that will protect people. And these are the kinds of issues, arguments that really need to be addressed in a larger sense and continue to come to the forefront as the world becomes more digitized. It's an issue of privacy. As all of our personal information becomes digitized, whether we're giving it to Google or Facebook or the government or a big company for marketing purposes or whatever, how is this information really being used? And what's being done to protect our privacy? We need really to put pressure on government to take proactive measures in order to protect our privacy. That's really what needs to be happening. This knee-jerk reaction, this reaction to governments doing these kinds of things, it's inadequate. We need to get out in front of this, and we need politicians who are freedom-focused to, in my opinion, to get focused on these issues and take a proactive approach, so that we start to put provisions in place through amendments to existing laws and maybe even amendments to the Charter of Rights and Freedoms itself and to the Constitution, which can be done. You can do that. You just need to get, you know, the right number of premiers on board. I think it's like 7 out of 10, and have a certain number of people on vote in favor of it, and you can make changes to the Constitution. These are the kinds of things that need to be happening. We need provisions in place to protect privacy. No question about it. And this is just another example of that. So I'm just responding to all of these requests for me to address this issue here tonight, because of course what happens in one province eventually happens across the board. Nova Scotia really just kind of being one of the first out of the gate to digitize health information and raise this whole issue of personal healthcare privacy. What else do I have for you tonight? Also, you know, I think we are running. You know what? I've got this for you. I'm going to run a little bit of a clip out of the Nova Scotia legislature, because I do have the clip where this was actually passed. It was just passed into law, and there's just a little bit of a clip during the debate here and the discussion in the House that took place, where the government really, you know, explains how they think they can justify doing this. I hope I can make this play for you here as I'm out on location remote all the way from Costa Rica. Here's the Nova Scotia legislature.
I recognize the Honorable Minister of Public Works.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd just like to take a few minutes to address the misinformation that is being stated here now twice on the floor of the legislature by the MLA for Cumberland North regarding the broadening of the mandate of Highway 104 Western Alliance.
Hang on, this isn't... I don't think this is what we need to hear.
Order.
It is the FM.
We're going to get to this. Hang on.
I'd ask the honorable member to retract and replace the word misinformation. I recognize the honorable member of Public Works.
Hang on. Let me get this for you. Here we go. Okay.
This minister must meet under the Act, which I currently have, and every other health minister under the Act has had, are not changing, including the legal obligation to protect individuals' information and privacy. Information cannot be used for just anything. It can only be used for the specific purpose it's elected for. And in this case, it is to manage the healthcare system, plan for the future, allocate resources, and ensure that people have access to their own personal health records. In fact, using data for other reasons would be in violation of this act. Rest assured, no health minister will be looking at anyone's individual health records. No one needs to worry about the confidentiality of their discussions with their physician. Nova Scotia's health records are secure and no data will be stored on the Your HealthNS app. This change does not impact any of the privacy protections that are provided in the Act currently. No change is being made to any of the legislative parameters that cover use or the protection of private health information. The change is simply expanding the data sources connecting to our existing system, the same system already in place for hospital visits or for doctors to be paid, for example. The change will give us high-level data about family doctor or specialist visits, for instance, and give Nova Scotians access to their own records about these types of appointments. A full privacy health assessment has been done on all of the systems and how they handle data. The information being collected and provided as part of the current pilot is being done according to the highest standard of Canadian privacy protections, and all the necessary safeguards are in place, and that won't change. This amendment is necessary to expand that pilot so that everyone can access their records if they wish to, and that's what we're working towards. It will allow us to give Nova Scotians access to their own electronic health records in the palm of their hands. Too often we hear that people struggle to get their medical information or they have to pay expensive fees to access it. Nova Scotians shouldn't have to jump through hoops to get records that are rightfully theirs. The only way to ensure everyone has a choice to access their information is to mandate that healthcare professionals make it available. Nova Scotians told us to treat their health information with diligence, and we will, and we are. We have also consulted with equity-seeking groups around data collection, and we continue to engage them to ensure the principles that they want around the collection and release are followed to protect rights for privacy and safety. Department of Health and Wellness has established relationships with organizations like Dudgegamek and entities like the Client Linkage Registry. We also have relationships with the Data Reference Working Group, who were integral in the development of race-based data collection, the Fair Care Project. And through these relationships, we have worked and will continue to work on not only the regs that are developed, but other projects to ensure data is protected and vetted through a culturally safe and relevant lens. Through these collaborative relationships, we will ensure people have access to their own data and their own story. Going forward, we will work with all stakeholders, including the College of Physicians and Surgeons, the Regulated Health Professional Network, and Doctors Nova Scotia as we develop the regulations. This approach has been successful in the past, creating the Patient Access to Care Act regulations, and we will work to ensure similar successes with these. This amendment is necessary to ensure that we have a modern healthcare system that Nova Scotians deserve now and into the future. Thank you.
So that's the government line.
Honorable member, city member two.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll be very brief. And just in response to the minister's comments, the doctors don't agree. The College of Physicians doesn't. They don't agree. They don't agree. They said it changes the relationship between the doctor and the patient. Everything the minister just said, she stood on her feet, I get it. The doctors do not agree with that statement. So I want to get it on the record. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
If I am to recognize the Honorable Minister of Finance, it will be to close debate on Bill.
So that gives you the two perspectives, and it did pass. So it has received royal assent. It's a done deal. It is a done deal. And the controversy continues. This is, even though it's the law, it doesn't mean it can't be amended, can't be changed. And as you heard, there will be ongoing discussion surrounding this issue, as there should be. And I share concerns with all Canadians. And if I lived in Nova Scotia, I'd be concerned about it too. I'm concerned that it's going to roll out in a similar fashion here where I live. We need to, I've said this for a long time, we need to be proactive in the way that we are dealing with personal privacy issues as our personal information becomes digitized. It's changing technology, which is changing our society. And we need, and the old laws and the old ways of doing things are not going to be entirely adequate to deal with these new realities. Simple as that. And we need more to be done to protect us from government. That's what we need, in my personal opinion. But you know, the other thing to keep in mind here is that the whole reason this information is in the government's hands to begin with is because people ask for that. It's because of socialism, socialized healthcare. Your relationship with your doctor is not entirely private because people want free healthcare. As a result of that, the government pays for the healthcare. If the government's paying for it, they instantly get access to your information. It's not a private transaction between you and your healthcare provider. If I was just paying a doctor to provide care, the government would have limited rights in that transaction. They might be able to tax it, but they wouldn't necessarily need to know who I, the customer, am, because they could just tax the income coming in. Do you understand? But as soon as you demand that the government get involved, or you allow the government to get involved on your behalf in order to provide you with what you think is free, or me, or we as a society, when I say you, I mean we as a society, as a country, as citizens, instantly, they become part of the transaction, part of the process. They then have to know, well, who is the citizen? You have to present your card. It's Joe Blow. Joe Blow went to see Doc Smith, and Doc Smith says, yes, Joe Blow came here. Here's his health information. He was here on this day. He accessed the system, availed himself of the government service, and I need to get my fee. I need to get paid now for providing the health care. So here's the bill, government, and the government then has to pay for that. And the government gets to regulate everything because they're entirely involved in the process, aren't they? So if you want privacy, you need to get less government involvement. Otherwise, they'll always be involved. Always. It's the way socialism works. You can't get, it's not free. You don't get socialism for free. You pay for it with your freedom. And that's a perfect example of how it works. Now, that's not to say that it's entirely bad, especially for people who maybe don't make a lot of money. If you're living on like $16,000 a year and you can't afford health care, then maybe the socialized healthcare system is a really helpful thing. And it could be a good thing too. But you have to expect that the government's going to be involved in your personal affairs, your personal medical affairs to some degree, because they're paying for it. Or at least we as a society are paying for it, and they're administering all of that. In fact, we're all paying for it. It all comes from us, ultimately, as a community, as a society. But you pay for it with your freedom, folks. That's the way it works. People don't seem to understand that. They want freedom, but they also want their free stuff. Free stuff means you pay for it with your freedom. That's just the way it goes down. What's tomorrow? Tomorrow is Friday, right? Already getting near the end of the week. Is it Friday tomorrow? Let me just check that. So anyway, that's the way I view it anyway. The other thing is like with the healthcare stuff, I'd be quite content to pay. And if I was gainfully employed, I it's my view that we need sort of a hybrid system where we make sure that people don't fall through the cracks. There's a minimum level of healthcare provided for people, a minimum level, so that everybody gets a minimum level of healthcare. But that's a very difficult thing to quantify and justify. Who gets what level of care? And, above this certain level, people can pay. And that, but then it becomes an ethical thing too, right? This person doesn't have enough money, so they die. And this person has the money, so they get to live. But this person worked and this person didn't. These are very complex social and ethical issues. And I wish there were easy answers, but we really don't have easy answers to any of these things. But I'll tell you this, overall, people do get care, I guess, and the system is under strain. It's not working well. It's not adequately funded, but that's also because of the way it's structured and because they're giving the stuff away for free. And when you give things away for free, the way supply and demand works in the world of natural economic law, if there is no restriction on supply, or rather on if you're giving stuff away for free, so the price is zero in the minds of people, then demand will spike. So the only way you can control things is by controlling supply, your ration. And that's where we end up with the long waiting lines. We've had these discussions before, but this is really tonight an issue of privacy, and it needs to be addressed more adequately. Now, with all of that being said, I think what we're going to do, folks, is kind of wrap up for the night. I am in Costa Rica, and I am going to do an abbreviated show tonight. Now, I will tell you this. There was a rerun of The Strange Bedfellows running also on the Maverick platform and on some of Lori's channels as well with Roger Stone attorney Tyler Nixon. And that's been running simulcast at the same time as this show. So we're kind of competing with ourselves, but you might want to check that out. If you've been watching here, you might want to go over and check that out too on either Lori's channels or on the Maverick channel. If you didn't see the Tyler Nixon interview, great guy, very interesting. And he's talking, I think tonight, the portion of the interview had to do with one of Trump's legal battles. So very interesting conversation. I'll be back. I think tomorrow, as long as I can put something together for you, around the same time, it'll either be 6 p.m., 7 p.m. It depends on what's going on here and what I'm up against in terms of trying to come on. I wanted to come on at 6 tonight, talk for an hour, and then let the strange bedfellows thing happen at 7, but I just couldn't make that happen. So 7 o'clock it was. It'll be either 6 or 7 tomorrow night. So just look for the preview, and I look forward to seeing all of you back here online when I return from Costa Rica. Try to keep pronouncing that correctly. Love all you guys. Tomorrow's Friday. I don't know what else to say. Sun's going down. Going to be a beautiful day. Catch you on the flip side.
This has been a Maverick Multimedia production.